You're listening to another exclusive podcast with Pituitary World News. This is Jorge Facinetti. Welcome. In this podcast, Dr. Blevins talks about growth hormone replacement. He focuses his talk on discussions he had at a recent meeting of growth hormone deficiency leaders. Discussions including different tests and the dynamics of pituitary disease affecting medical decision-making. Towards the end of the podcast, Dr. Blevins talks about how to use some of this information to work more effectively with your physicians. Here's Dr. Blevins.
Good afternoon, folks. This is Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News, podcasting to you from Sausalito, California, on a beautiful sunny afternoon. I understand that rain is on the way, and while that will be welcome, it certainly is nice to have blue skies with very interesting cloud formations. I hope you're having a wonderful day. I had the opportunity this past weekend to spend some time at a conference with other thought leaders in the field of neuroendocrinology discussing growth hormone replacement. It was a rather interesting and sometimes entertaining meeting, and I enjoyed catching up with a lot of old friends. I was prompted to do this podcast after a discussion that ensued about the use of dynamic tests to assess growth hormone reserve. And for those of you who are not familiar with that concept, when we think the pituitary gland is not working very well, sometimes we try to stimulate it to see what it's capable of doing. When it comes to assessing growth hormone reserve, we have a number of different stimulation tests, if you will, that will bring out growth hormone production from the basal or normal state. So these are designed to prompt growth hormone release from the pituitary gland. And we as endocrinologists believe, based on a lot of prior research and other similar paradigms, that when we stimulate the gland, we are achieving some sort of response that will illustrate to us the integrity or the health of the pituitary gland. And that makes perfect sense, that if you see that a pituitary gland can make growth hormone in response to a stimulus, that the patient is normal. If the patient does not have a response to the stimulus, the patient is abnormal. The waters, however, are very muddy, and they're muddy for a number of different reasons. First off, pituitary diseases affect the hypothalamus and the pituitary in different ways. And these different stimulation tests stimulate growth hormone secretion from the pituitary gland in different ways. Some will act on the hypothalamus, while some will act on the pituitary gland itself. And some, we really don't fully understand the mechanism of growth hormone secretion in response to stimulation. But regardless, in most of these tests, you get a response. We can measure that. Growth hormone levels increase in those who are normal, and they don't rise or rise insufficiently in those who are abnormal. So one of the problems then is the type of disease process and the particular stimulation test used. Another problem is that in adults, the responses are less than they are in children. In obese adults, the responses are less than they are in adults who are non-obese. This is all compounded by the fact that our gold standard test of growth hormone reserve, the insulin-induced hypoglycemia test, may not really be the best test or the gold standard test at all. And I say that because when you look at the cutoff results for insulin-induced hypoglycemia, cutoff being a level that determines who's normal and who's abnormal, those cutoffs aren't very high. But if you do another stimulation, such as growth hormone releasing hormone and arginine, growth hormone releasing hormone no longer being available, you see very robust responses. So you might see the gold standard test, a patient have a growth hormone level rise to 7, but with the GHRH and arginine test, we might have seen the same patient go to 15 or 20. Some of the other tests that are used have much lower cutoffs. So for example, the glucagon stimulation test, I use a cutoff of 5. Some people are recommending using a cutoff level of 3.5 for non-obese adults and as low as 1.0 or thereabouts for obese adults. Others will use a cutoff of about 2.1 or 2.5. I've seen different numbers in the literature. Now, the problem I have with this is that normal individuals, if they have normal growth hormone reserve and you properly stimulate the pituitary gland, you can get a robust growth hormone response. And these growth hormone levels of around 2 to 3 or 4 in response to a provocative agent or a stimulus really aren't very much of a response at all. So how can we use a test that has such a low level of responsiveness in normal people to define those who are abnormal? It doesn't make a lot of sense to me when you start to think about it like that. The other thing is that the lower the assay level is, so the lower the growth hormone level is, for example, the greater the inter and intra-assay coefficient of variation. And that basically means if we took one sample and tested it 10 times, we would get 10 different growth hormone results. If we took one sample and tested it in 10 different assays or 10 different days, we would get 10 different growth hormone results. Fortunately, these results would be in a normal distribution, but they can vary as much by 20 or 30% when you're at the low level. So how can you say that a cutoff of 2.1 really is what you should be using, or 2.5 or whatever, because it might be 2.5 plus or minus 30%. And if a patient slightly makes that cutoff or doesn't make the cutoff, you make a clinical treatment decision based on the stimulation tests. So I have problems with the tests that we currently use. I don't think they're robust enough. We use them and they work, but I think we have to be very careful in defining cutoffs, because patients who have disease and have a deficiency of growth hormone usually want to be treated. So we need a cutoff or a determination that's going to enable us to get most of the people who have the deficiency and need to be treated. And this is where pretest probability and Bayesian theories and all sorts of statistical methods and receiver-operator characteristic curve analysis and determination of cutoffs comes into play. These are the things that researchers and physicians think about when they think about the response to a particular test and how to determine if that test is an appropriate response or not. I was very dismayed at the meeting hearing some high-level pituitary endocrinologists, and endocrinologists, I would say at my level, who direct centers of excellence at their particular institutions, who seem to be very dogmatic, or maybe pragmatic's the word, I don't know, kind of a mix, about the use of stimulation tests and particular cutoffs. And if they had a patient that had pituitary disease and they tested them, and that patient had a growth hormone response of less than 3.5 or less than 2.1 or whatever cutoff they were using, they would treat that patient. But if that patient just barely crossed to that threshold, they would not treat that patient with growth hormone. And I think this is short-sighted, and it's endocrinologists flagellating themselves over numbers, statistical numbers, without making sense of the whole patient. And that's what I refer to as medical decision making, where you take a look at the MRI, and if there's very little to no residual pituitary gland, and you look at the rest of the pituitary functions, and if there's multiple pituitary hormone deficits, and you have a growth hormone stimulation test, and if the patient barely passes, that patient probably has growth hormone deficiency still. And that's a patient that probably would benefit from treatment, but is denied treatment because of a certain researcher decided on a cutoff that's not a perfect cutoff. None of these cutoffs are perfect. And that's where I think medical decision-making needs to take into account. What's the status of the pituitary gland functionally, anatomically? What's the likelihood this patient has a diagnosis of growth hormone deficiency? And for example, if a patient has little to no residual pituitary and multiple pituitary hormone deficits, there's a 99% likelihood they have growth hormone deficiency. So the pretest probability is probably 99%, certainly greater than 90% in that setting. Let's say 90%. That's a high probability. And if you barely pass a stimulation test with a very low cutoff, on a test that doesn't really stimulate growth hormone very well, how do you know that patient doesn't really truly have growth hormone deficiency, even if they barely pass? And when it's possible the inter and intra-assay coefficients of variation are playing a role, it's possible a stimulation test isn't that robust in the first place, and it's possible that that patient's pre-disease growth hormone responses would have been, you know, the sky's the limit kind of numbers. So I have a lot of problem with this, and I encourage treating physicians to work with patients to make clinical decisions that make sense. This all applies to patients who have a history of pituitary disease and not to the patient who comes in, has a low IGF-1 checked for some reason, has an MRI showing no pituitary disease, all other pituitary functions are normal. Those patients are different. The pretest probability of growth hormone deficiency is low. But when the probability is high, if you barely eke out a, quote, normal, unquote, response, it's likely that's a false positive test. And if you repeat it, you may see an abnormality. So one of the ways that I address this in my practice is that it's been well established for most of these tests that a cutoff of 5 is a reasonable criterion for normal versus abnormal. Over 5, you're normal. Under 5, you're abnormal for most of these diagnostic tests. If the pretest probability of growth hormone deficiency is high, such as in patients who have pituitary disease or pituitary surgery or whatever, and they have a response less than 5, I tend to offer treatment with growth hormone to my patients, taking into account their clinical situation, the likely duration of the disease process, and what benefits we may receive as a consequence of what symptoms and signs they have. If they're over 5, I don't offer treatment, and I think the FDA would not permit that, nor would any insurance company. So 5 is a good cutoff to me. And I don't subscribe to these extremely low cutoffs, which to me reflect that these diagnostic tests aren't really provoking growth hormone responses in normal people either. So I just wanted to sort of share some of those thought processes with you. What can you take from this? I think that if you have definite pituitary disease, the first thing is you should consider growth hormone replacement if you're growth hormone deficient, because there are tremendous benefits of therapy. It's not for everybody. It's contraindicated in some people, but you certainly should have the discussion with your physician about whether you need growth hormone. When you undergo diagnostic testing, work with your physician to ensure that if you're under 5, but over whatever cutoff your doctor seems to be using, if they're using one that's, say, 2.1 or 3.5 or whatever, work with them to ensure that the decision-making or the rationale about denying growth hormone or starting growth hormone is appropriate. Because if you go to 2.7 and they're using 2.5 and you have other pituitary deficits, you probably still need growth hormone in my view. So consider that. So that's about it today. I just wanted to talk a little bit about medical decision making and how endocrinologists and other physicians as well can make mistakes if they adhere to strict cutoffs on results of dynamic tests that don't make sense. With that said, plenty of our dynamic tests make perfect sense, and the cutoffs have been well established and proven in clinical practice. But for something as nebulous as growth hormone deficiency with stimulation tests that aren't really that robust, I think that they need to be taken in consideration of the entire picture that the patient presents. So work with your physicians, review those issues, and let us know if you have any questions or concerns. Again, this has been Dr. Lewis Blevins podcasting to you on growth hormone deficiency from Sausalito, California. I hope you have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening. Bye.